time for the second paper is now up, and I call upon Jaco Dreyer to please come forward. And he's going to speak to us on religious fundamentalism, Ubuntu, and the quest for a culture of human rights. It just keeps on getting better. Thank you.
Title, that is the one that I sent in, but working on it, I must say I actually will not get to the last part of it, but only deal with the first two. You can just come up this. I use a Mac, so I don't. There you are. Thank you. Good. First of all, I would like to say, position myself, because I think it's very important to know where you come from when you take part in such a discussion. As I say, I'm a practical theologian, so I'm not a legal scholar. And I listened to the previous speakers, and it's really a little bit intimidating with the legal scholars being around. So, but I will come from my own perspective. My interest is in how do we deal with difference in the religious sphere. Because in my research, I've done some empirical research, it is clear that certain theological positions lead to problems in society. And that is my broad interest in what role can theology play in the public sphere. In this paper, I restrict myself to two questions. First of all, what can we learn from Ubuntu ethic? Now, some call it a worldview, a philosophy, whatever, in dealing with the problem of otherness, and specifically the religious other in Africa. And the second one is, what are the weaknesses of this ethic, and how can we respond to those weaknesses? Now, my paper, it's a little bit like a hop-on, hop-off bus in London. Those of you who've been on those tours, if you just stay on the bus, you just try to take a picture, but the building is already gone. And so it's very superficial, but for each of these points, you can actually stop and take a long tour. And this is actually my paper, is just giving the surface, but on each of these points, you actually have to stay for a while to really get to grips with it. But I hope those of you who will go this journey with me will get something out of it. So please stay with me. I also have to acknowledge what Maylan, one of my colleagues at the University of Pretoria, also refers to as symbolic violence. And that is when we talk about concepts like Ubuntu. I'm a white African. I'm not part of that cultural background, so I try to understand it from as best as I can, and that is my position. But I come from a totally different tradition, so that is my way I am, and I hope that you will also engage with me as honestly as possible. Good. In my abstract, I refer to the author Suyinka. He's a Nobel laureate, and he wrote a very interesting book of Africa, and that appeared in 2012. I don't know if any of you have seen the book or read the book, but he writes in beautiful prose about the ambivalent role of religion in Africa. I just took two quotes here, but there are many beautiful long descriptions. He says, on the one hand, religion as an assiduous handmaiden to the territorial pursuit of power and the enthronement of fascism. So not a very positive thing to say about religion. And he describes the role, especially in the Lake District and Western Africa and so on, and we all aware of what's happening with Boko Haram and the questions about the role of religion and politics, etc. But underneath many conflicts in Africa, you will find some religious component. And he describes it and he says this is one of the really terrible things in Africa. But on the other hand, he said, he refers to the unfathomable influence of religion on the human mind in the service of the common good and the role of religion as, and I quote, the restraining factor in anti-humanist drives. So on the one hand, it's this very negative role. On the other hand, he sees a very positive role also. And he says that we have to concede, at least theoretically, that our situation could be much worse without religion. And I think, just referring back to the TRC, I mean, it was full of errors and it was not a perfect solution. But if we think back of what the TRC did in our country, I think you see there also the positive role. Of course, if you look at apartheid and the theological legitimation of apartheid, you'll see this first one, the really negative part of religion, but we also see the positive side of it. So the underlying issue that I'm not going to deal here with religious fundamentalism and so on and describe it and critique it. For me, part of the issue is how do we deal with difference? Because I think with religious fundamentalism, as in all other kinds of fundamentalisms, the underlying problem, or one of the underlying issues, is how do we deal with difference? How can we deal with the other and otherness in pluralistic societies? And that is also referring to the conference theme. Now, if we look a little bit wider, not only at Africa, because I think Africa is not so much different from the rest of the world. The author Sharmer wrote a very interesting piece on the three divides that he sees in the current world. The ecological divide, it's a divide between self and nature. The social divide between self and the other. And the spiritual divide, the divide between yourself and your higher self, as he says. Now I think many of the, it's of course a very high level of abstraction and you will have to unpack it, but I think in these three divides we see something of what is happening in the world. I think these three divides are actually very noticeable in most contexts in the world, not only in Africa. And that brought me to the idea of Ubuntu. Now, as I say, I'm not an Ubuntu scholar, and I started studying the literature, and I can promise you, it is it's immense, the literature on Ubuntu, and this is part of my project, is to really go into more detail in the Ubuntu concept. But I start here with what Tutu said after the TRC, and maybe you've seen it many times before, but maybe if you listen to it again, you will get something from it. Africans have this thing called Ubuntu, the essence of being human. It is part of the gift that Africans will give the world. It embraces hospitality, caring about others, willing to go the extra mile for the sake of others. We believe a person is person through another person, that my humanity is caught up, bound up, and inextricably in yours. When I dehumanize you, I inexorably dehumanize myself. The solitary individual is a contradiction in terms, and therefore you seek to work for a common good because your humanity comes into its own community in belonging. Now I think this is not an academic discussion, but I think it captures much of the richness of this concept. I just have and there are literally hundreds of quotes that I can give you. I just refer here to Haile. He makes a distinction between some what he calls personal, or we can say more informal definitions and formal definitions. He refers to he said, the specifics of trying to define and translate the term Ubuntu are formidable. Archbishop Desmond Tutu noted that Ubuntu is very difficult to render into a Western language. So there we also have the problem of language and translation of concept, which opens another, it's maybe one of the first stop points for the hop-on-hop-off buzz is what we mean by translation. But noted that Ubuntu is very difficult to render into Western language other than to say it is my humanity. Is caught up, it's inextricably bound up in what is yours, so that we've heard. But he says, in a more formal sense, and we know that the government has also used the concept of Ubuntu, it's not only done by the church or civil society, the government uses it, of course, in the for nation building, and they have their own variety. He quotes Ubuntu as the principle of caring for each other's well-being and the spirit of mutual support. Each individual's humanity is ideally expressed through his or her relationship with others and theirs in turn through recognition of the individual's humanity. Ubuntu means that people are people through other people. It also acknowledges both the rights and responsibilities of every citizen in promoting individual and societal well-being. Now that, especially the last part about the rights and responsibilities is maybe more the formal part, and the legal scholars can help us unpacking that. So just another quote here from Broodrijk. He says, Ubuntu is an ancient African worldview based on the primary values of intense humanness, caring, sharing, respect, compassion, and dissociated values, ensuring a happy and qualitative human community life in the spirit of family. It sounds very idealistic and almost romantic, but this is sometimes the view of Ubuntu. Lastly, I just want to refer to Meilan again. He makes an important distinction between the discourse on Ubuntu and the work of Ubuntu. And I think this is a very, very valid distinction. He says that when you work, for instance, in a parish, or you're part of a civil organization, you often see this Ubuntu principle in practice. It's there, it's active. You see the friendliness between people, the willingness to forgive, the willingness to go the extra mile. We all, when we come back from a foreign country and we arrive here, I'm always struck by the friendliness of the people in our context. And I feel at home, and there's something that is there, and I think that is the work of Ubuntu. But the discourse on Ubuntu is the more formal discourse, and often there's divide between the discourse and actually the work of Ubuntu. Now, our time is very limited, so I'm quickly going to a critique of Ubuntu. One of the authors that I think has done a lot of work on this is Metz from the University of Johannesburg. And I just refer here to three main criticisms that he raised against the concept of Ubuntu. He first of all refers to its vagueness. And I think conceptually it is very difficult to define. Secondly, anachronism. And I have a few quotes here. I'll quickly read them to you. Although a reflection on Ubuntu can hardly ignore inherited notions of it, surely the more important question has to be, how should Ubuntu be understood and utilized for the common good of all Africans and of the world at large? The ideal of an African Renaissance calls for critical re-readings of existing narratives of reconciliation and reintegration, including the Ubuntu narrative. It does not call for the romanticization of an indigenous past. Such is the challenge of Ubuntu ethics, and that is a quote by Lowe. And Mohale, who wrote a very interesting dissertation on the Heritage Transformation Charter, which was actually just, I think in April, was this charter launched. She writes, fairly early into the analysis of the text, it became apparent that the Heritage Transformation Charter repeatedly used the philosophical concept of Ubuntu and this is important, nostalgic elements of an African community-based egalitarian society towards recommendations for the resolution of inequalities in the heritage sector as well as a wider South African society. So is this idea of the nostalgic past, the rural, beautiful pastoral scene of Africa without violence, which is of course also not really true. But the main criticism, and the third one that Metzi refers to, is collectivism. And I have here three short quotes. Again, Lowe, in short, although it articulates such important values as respect, human dignity and compassion, the Ubuntu desire for consensus also has a potential dark side, in terms of which it demands an oppressive conformity and loyalty to the group. And that is, I think here we now come to the more contentious issues of Ubuntu and the relationship between the individual and community and the preference. And it brings the whole notion of human rights. Is it based in the individual? Is it based in the community? All those issues now come to the fore. I'm not going to pronounce the second author's surname. You can read it for yourself. He says, this contribution to the debate will argue that if a sustainable solution to all of these problems is to be found, the key area requiring philosophical debate is the degree to which the subjective development of the self is submerged in an African sense of collective identity. Now that's a strong statement that he makes. But I think it's something that we have to reflect on. What does it mean? Does it mean that the individual, in a sense, disappears? And I would like to think back of the whole idea of religious fundamentalism. Often the group takes precedence and you have to conform in all ways. So the tension between the individual and community or communities is something that I think is important. Lastly, Moale again says, more often than not, politicians' speeches and appeals relate to principles of Ubuntu, with communities being addressed through arguments that their cultural and by default racial loyalty should lie with their former liberators. Now, I'm not going to try to unpack that. Lastly, Hailey says, however, it is important not to overlook the negative consequences of this synergetic relationship between an individual and the community, and in turn how easy it is for community tensions to lead to violence. So, good. Those three criticisms, I think, capture something of what I would like to explore further in my research. What I've seen up to now, and this is the point that I would like to make, I think Ubuntu needs to be reconstructed, it has to be revisited. And I think Lowe already mentioned that in one of the quotes that I said. We have to appropriate it in a sense for our own context. My idea, and this is the idea that I share with you now, is to link up the idea of Ubuntu with Ricoeur's idea of a narrative identity. I don't know if you've read the book Oneself as Another from Paul Ricoeur, the French philosopher, in which he describes the notion of narrative identity, that we're not only formed by the narratives that we tell about ourselves, but we're also formed by the narratives others tell about us, and that we're part of that relational network, and that we cannot be a self, that selfhood implies the relationship with the other. So he has a very interesting position, and I think within that position you can see a lot of links with Ubuntu. Although I would say Ubuntu has, for me, if we think back of the three divides, the concept of Ubuntu addresses all three of them. It addresses the divide between self and nature, because I think in Ubuntu there is no such big distinction between the human beings and nature. So that is the first one. The second one, between the self and the other, and that is more where Ricoeur focuses. And the last one is the self and the higher self. Now, that is also Ricoeur as a Protestant theologian as well, he reflects also a lot on that as being called by God, and what does that mean, and the naming of a person, etc. So there are many avenues to explore, but I just think that this is also a way to address the, in a sense, Paul Scholes is always the person looking for a way between two extremes. And I see the extreme between a kind of a liberal, very individualistic type of selfhood, and very communal, maybe the extreme of Ubuntu, where the individual is also always looking up to this, to the community, and the community takes precedence, where you have more that the two intention. It's not that the tension will ever be solved, but it's a relationship of tension, and within that relationship, narrative identity, I think, plays an important role. Okay, concluding remarks. Why is it important for law scholars, for theologians and so on? Linda Woody, the British scholar of religion, wrote a very interesting piece in which she said that social systems like arts, media, science, law, education, religion, etc. They all deal in ideas and symbols. They are part of the formation of ideas in the world. And our anthropologies, our view of selfhood, etc., will play an immense role in our communication and in whatever we do. So I think, especially within law and religion, they call it the soft powers. Maybe law is harder than theology, because Ricoeur also refers to the importance of love and justice, and that theology also has that that extra that is not present in law, but that's something that we can discuss. So the challenge is to bring to life the Ubuntu ethic in these social systems, in law and in theology. I would like to conclude with Steve Biko, a quote, saying that he said, members of Western society seem to be very concerned with perfecting their technological know-how while losing out on their spiritual dimension. We believe that in the long run, the special contribution to the world by Africa will be in this field of human relationship. The great powers of the world have done wonders in giving the world an industrial and military loop, but the great gift still has to come from Africa, giving the world a more human face. Perhaps this is also the romantic version, but I think there is something in it that we, in working in law, in the fields of law and theology, has to engage with. How can we make this a more humane world? Thank you.
Yaku, thank you very much for your contribution to this dialogue between law and religion. We have a few minutes, 5-6 minutes for discussion. Brett, please.
Thank you very much, Ayaka. This is very interesting. One suggestion and then one question. The suggestion is, as you try to link this to the human rights dialogue, I'd point you towards P.C. Chang, who was the Chinese delegate to the Human Rights Commission that was part of the 5-member team that was responsible for drafting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In Article 1, where it refers to reason and conscience, the Chinese word that he had in mind was ren, which is made up of the Chinese character of person and two. So it means two-man-mindedness or other-regardingness. And there was a mistranslation of that term into the word conscience, which is unfortunate because conscience is an inward-looking mechanism. It's a very important idea, I think, but it isn't quite captured by the idea of ren. Marianne Glendon's book about the drafting of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is really helpful in this regard. And I think you'd find it a really nice way of linking Ubuntu to other cultural ideas that are related and also very important. The question I have is, I'm wondering a little bit about what sort of principle Ubuntu is, as you're describing it. Is it a moral principle? Is it a psychological principle? Is it a political, a legal, anthropological principle? And if the answer to that question were clear, then I think our ability to understand and respond to the idea of Ubuntu would be greater. So I'd be interested in your answer to that. Are you thinking of Ubuntu primarily as a metaphysical principle, a psychological principle, a moral principle? I heard elements of each of those, but it wasn't quite clear to me.
Thank you very much for the suggestion. I will definitely follow up on that. My own preference is more towards the moral, and I think that links up quite well with Ricoeur's notion. So, of course, as I said, it's such a vague term, and it's you can go into so many different paths, in a sense, with this concept. But I would like to focus especially on the moral concept.
Johan indicated, and then Ian, short questions, please.
Very much along the same line as Brett. When I was reading about Ubuntu, and I'm not an expert in this field, I saw a kind of parallel with Immanuel Kant's categorical imperative. He was a great German philosopher who was looking at the basis of moral propriety, what is good. And he formulated that in many different ways, but probably the most simplistic way was to say, always behave in such a way that if anybody else does the same thing, it would still be good. And that imperative reminds me something of the African concept of Ubuntu, and you might just want to comment on that.
Yeah, thank you. I think thinking of Ricoeur, I would say he doesn't say that either deontological or teleological. He actually, it's again his position in between, trying to bridge the two. And I think that is the direction in which I would like to go as well. It's not only the deontological categorical imperative, but also the teleological moment. So I don't know if that answers you, but yes, I agree, Kant has, his maxim is quite important, and I think that idea is also resonated in the golden rule in the Bible. So yeah, of course it plays an important role.
Okay, last question, Ian, please, for this session.
In law, there's been a very significant piece, it's well known to jurisprudential scholars, and that's by Robert Cover, on law as nomos. And in that, he discusses the idea of constitutional narratives. Charles Taylor, the Canadian philosopher, most recently has written about social imaginaries. In both cases, these writers, philosophical and legal, are urging us to see the stories we tell ourselves. So this is resonating with your paper. The stories we tell ourselves, how we envision our place in the world. And I thought your paper extremely useful in the way you brought out these approaches to nature, to culture, to the self. In the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms, which more will be said about later in the week, but which far too little has been taken notice of yet, there's a recital 7, which refers to the goods that religions may give to culture. And in there, and this is a legal frame, it refers to law's contributions to compassion, community, love, and understanding. So there's a gesture towards doing what Albie Sachs noticed as a void within legal thinking years ago, namely that it doesn't speak sufficiently about love. So I mean, I think here we have the beginnings perhaps of bridging some of these terrible disciplinary fragmentations which have so bedeviled the contemporary age. So thanks for your paper.
Thank you. Before I give Jaco opportunity to respond to that, I'm going to overrule myself and give the Reverend Senamu Molesima He wants to make a remark on this very shortly.
Thank you. It's just a small comment. Yes, I agree with your paper externally on the Ubuntu philosophy. I just want to say that Ubuntu is not a locked rate. Some of the leading bishops in the country, even in Korea, Bishop Duhanyani, and also the late previous Bishop of the Anglican Church, Leon Kukun, they always think so about just doing good from the depth of your heart. South Africa is at the primal stage, and the fact that we are in the development stage, Ubuntu would always be about doing good, good from the heart of every one of us. You know, had it not been for the outfacing of the word multiracialism by the non-racialism, Ubuntu would be the universal, would find a universal space. But it remains a level of contact in oxygen.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Sinamu. Yaku, if you want to make some responses.
Thank you. It was actually more two comments rather than questions, but I think the one comment that I would like to make is how fruitful it is to meet between law scholars and theologians. Because I really think I've just now already got some very interesting links to my own work, and I think there are bridges to be built. I often think, and this is just a hypothesis, but in a sense law fulfill many of the functions that religion fulfilled in earlier times. And so there's actually a very close relationship between law and religion. And I think this idea of narrative also captures something of that. The idea of memory. There are so many interesting concepts that that I think that we can work with. So thank you very much for everyone's contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Yaku, and on behalf of thank you for your contribution to this very, very important dialogue of law and religion.